and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, June 9th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble contributor Doreen Nicol sits down with Ontario educator Frank Dominic to discuss the state of Ontario's universal healthcare system. Healthcare privatization in Ontario is something Rabble writers have been closely following over the past year. For further reading, please visit the links in our show notes, or for all of you listening on radio, please visit rabble.ca. Frank Dominic is a teacher in Ontario who creates content on social media, focusing on news and politics, ranging from global issues to niche local Ontario content. You can follow him on Twitter at @TheFrankDominic and on TikTok at @FrankDominic. Doreen Nicol is a freelance writer and frequent contributor to Rabble.ca. She is diligently working to end poverty, hunger, and human rights abuses across Canada and the globe. Here are Doreen Nicol and Frank Dominic in conversation. Take a listen.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for speaking with me today about the state of universal health care in Ontario.
No problemo. Glad to be here.
During the month of May, the Ontario Health Coalition held a citizens' referendum. Ontarians could vote online or in person, and we're asked to vote on one simple question, yes or no to the privatization of public hospital services. Today, Natalie Mara, Executive Director for Ontario Health Coalition, announced the results. So spoiled votes, 341, yes to privatize, 7,001 votes, no to privatization, 378,726 votes. So close enough to about 400,000 votes were cast. With 98% of voters opposing privatization, what does this mean for the Ford government's plan to privatize hospital services?
Honestly, I think one of the main problems is if you look at Ford's statement in regards to this, he immediately didn't even pretend, he didn't even try to care about the will of the citizens. He immediately shrugged it off. And I think that just goes to show the disrespect that Ford actually has for his constituents and his voters, because here we have one of the largest referendums, citizen-led referendums in Canadian history. I know we didn't hit the million that we were hoping for, but 400,000 people coming out and saying, hey, don't touch our healthcare. And for Doug to just completely ignore us begging and pleading for him to do the right thing, it's, to me, just disrespectful and kind of disgusting.
And Frank, I know Ford is pushing for private partnerships in this whole scheme of privatization. They're also known as P3s, and they'll be used to build new private hospitals and clinics. Could you explain to Rabble listeners how P3s roll out and why they are never beneficial for taxpayers and only benefit shareholders?
So the real problem with P3s is that we don't actually have any history of them working. So when you look at what a P3 does, it essentially takes public funds and gives that to a private corporation for them to then create a facility that will once again be used to generate private profits. Now, the argument is, oh, well, you know, they're going to do public surgeries in there. Cool. Public surgeries that will be billed to OHIP, that in a hospital would cost maybe $5,000 and you are going to charge the government $20,000. And then on top of that, you're taking away nurses from the healthcare system and you're going to be upcharging a citizen who is in that surgery. And we've already seen what happens. We've seen a few cases of people who are elderly and a few cases of people who don't have a complete mastery of the English language. What ends up happening is these private clinics take advantage of these citizens. Now, this has been happening even before the P3 partnership announcement. So this is something that we've already had a problem with in Ontario. So if it's already been a problem for years when there was barely any privatization, what's going to happen when Doug Ford starts rolling out mass privatization? I'm honestly worried about people who are like my grandparents, who didn't speak a lick of English, And if they don't have their children or grandchildren around to help them, they are going to be getting, they're going to be taken advantage of. And Doug is just going to sit there and say, oh, well, you know, oh, this is just how it works. But no, that's not how healthcare, that's not how public healthcare, that's not how the Canada Health Act is supposed to work.
If Ontario tax dollars are building these private clinics and private hospitals and even long-term care homes, which fall under that umbrella, why don't Ontarians demand that these facilities be handed back to them, put in the people's hands, run as nonprofits, say with a board overseeing them and also oversight provided by a local hospital?
See, because the problem is that you are proposing a logical situation that would actually provide benefit to society, whereas Doug Ford, what he tends to do is do what's going to benefit his billionaire buddies. We're going to look at companies like Loblaws profiting off this. We're going to look at companies like Mike Harris, who is on the board of directors for, it's escaping me now, Chartwell. Those are the companies that are going to be profiting off this. They're going to be making bank off of all this. And citizens are going to be left in the dust. We should be demanding more, and a lot of us are demanding more. The problem is that Doug Ford got a majority with 18% of people turning up to vote for him, and he is using that, and he's just steamrolling right through the will of the people.
And I want to bring up the point you just raised. Mike Harris was on the board of Chartwell. He still is.
And he's the guy who privatized healthcare or long-term care in the first place.
And he also set himself up to establish a company with his third wife,
called
Nurse Next Door. So that's a little sketchy to me. Like, how can a premier privatize long-term care and set up Nurse Next Door, which sort of starts to annihilate home care?
Well, it's because they knew this was coming, because this was the conservative playbook. Every conservative who was anybody knew that the goal was always to privatize parts of the healthcare system. Now, in Ontario, they can't say that outright because they will get absolutely demolished in elections. But then you look at what happens in Alberta with Danielle Smith, basically it being an open secret that she, her entire life's goal, like she has, I'm pretty sure that's almost a direct quote where she said one of her life's goals is to privatize healthcare. And Alberta voted her back in. So Doug can't go and be as audacious as she is, but all conservative party members knew this was coming. You cannot have been anybody with any modicum level of power in the conservative party over the last 20 years and not have known that this was the plan. This was always the plan. It was never not the plan.
And yet voters don't rebel against this. Ford is setting himself up for another Mike Harris situation. He is going to profit off what he's doing in the future when he's no longer premier.
Yep. I think one of the issues when it comes to the reactions of Canadians is that Canadians are a passive people for the most part. We don't want to be up in arms. That doesn't feel right to us. It doesn't feel like that's the way that Canadians do things. But maybe Canadians need to start thinking more like the French. We crack jokes about how, you know, they're always protesting, but you know what? They get stuff done. They the will of the people is heard. And maybe we need to start doing a better job of having the will of our people heard.
So Tommy Douglas, the father of our universal healthcare system, he always meant for universal pharmacare to be part of the healthcare plan. Can you share with Rabble listeners what you know about the cost savings pharmacare would generate?
So pharmacare is known globally to save money in the healthcare system. If it didn't save money, then it wouldn't be that basically every other country that has socialized healthcare would have pharmacare as well. We just saw in New Zealand, they just actually advanced their pharmacare program to get rid of one of the co-pays. So it's even cheaper now for New Zealand citizens to get their pharmacare. So when we look at what that would save in Ontario, I believe the recent study said it was somewhere around $1,400 per person, which is a massive amount of money, especially when you extrapolate that to the entire population that would be affected by a pharmacare program. There are, like, in most people, and this is true, most people in Ontario, in some capacity, have pharmacare included as a benefit of their career. The problem is that not a lot of people on the lower end of the pay scale have that, which means that you have a lot of kids who are the children who are innocent, who don't have access to pharmacare when they graduate. They might have pharmacare under OHIP Plus, but it doesn't cover everything that they might need. And it doesn't cover all of the needs of their parents either, which puts them in a situation where their household might not be in the best situation that it could be. You know what I mean? So we're setting people up to fail by not providing them with the healthcare that they need. And on top of that, what happens when somebody doesn't have the drugs that they need? They don't have the medication they need for their diabetes, for their ADHD, for their mental health, for whatever it is. They end up in the ER, and that costs us money, and that takes time away from people who have physical ailments that we need to be treating. Because mental health issues and those other issues of the body that could be solved through medication should not have to later on be solved in the ER. Those things should never make it to the hospitals. We know we can prevent them. We have the drugs and the tools and the capacity and the knowledge. We are one of the richest nations in the world with one of the most robust healthcare systems in the world, yet we continue to fail our citizens.
And again, I have to agree with you on that, Frank. Reality is, Frank, if more Ontarians had turned out to vote during the 2022 provincial election, we may not have had this majority conservative government that's intent on privatizing healthcare. As you mentioned, only 18% of eligible voters came out. So let's talk about voter apathy.
So when I consider what happened with the election, I think a lot of that boiled down to there's a twofold issue where people saw that Ford was most likely going to win a majority anyway. So why am I going to turn out to vote? My vote doesn't matter. And on the other hand, the Liberals and the NDP didn't really do a good job of presenting us with options of leaders that can inspire. Now, thankfully, when I look at the current iteration of both the NDP and the Liberals, I'm more hopeful. And I think that we're going to see larger turnout. With the NDP, I know that Merritt Stiles was essentially crowned. Nobody ran up against her, but she's fantastic. She was always my favorite member of the NDP caucus. And so I'm really glad to see that she's now taken on a leadership role. And when we look at some of the front runners for the Liberal Party, Nate Erskine-Smith, he's a great guy. And for those people who aren't fans of Trudeau, well, Trudeau's not a fan of him either, because Nate has always gone on record to make sure that he votes against his own party if he doesn't believe that they're doing what's in the best interest of citizens. So we have a hardworking Liberal there from the federal level coming down. And then Bonnie Crombie, who is the mayor of Mississauga, who is also looking at stepping up for the leadership. And so while there are other people running, I'm just highlighting those two because those are the two people who I think probably have the best chance of being the front runners and the two people who I think have the best chance of reaching out to average everyday Ontario citizens, both on the left, center, and the center right side of the political spectrum, who could reach the voters who maybe voted for Ford because they didn't see a better option. And a lot of people who vote for Ford, it's funny how they talk about him. They're like, oh, well, you know, he's just doing his best. I've had family members and friends be like, well, you know, Ford can barely even read. So the fact that he's holding the province together means he's doing a good job. They set the bar so low for their own candidate. So what we need to do is we need to come forward with a candidate who is capable, who is intelligent, and who can inspire people. And I don't think that people vote for Ford because they want to. I think it's they vote for Ford because they feel like there's no other choice.
I just want to talk about Ford a little bit more. So he is in the middle of dismantling large regions like Peel. So Peel's made up of Mississauga, Brampton, and a small area known as Caledon. That is going to have a huge impact on their healthcare as well as their public health department. I thought we should talk a bit about that. Caledon, the small area, doesn't have a hospital of its own. It really doesn't have money to fund its own public health department. And typically, a health department, as Ford has said, does go into restaurants and give them the check mark that they're, you know, clean and everything's fine. But they do more important work, like teach people about healthy living, disease prevention. They talk to pregnant and new mothers about how to stay healthy, how to feed their infants.
Yeah, we took some of those classes. Yep.
Yeah, vaccinations when kids need them. I've taken my kids there. So this is a huge gap that a very small town is going to have to fill. What kind of impact is this going to have on healthcare?
When we look at the dismantling of the regional system, I just want to make it clear. So the regional system had been brought in by conservatives a long past the Red Tory era, which are far removed from the modern day conservative. But I don't think that we should be painting all policy moves as being inherently bad, because there might be some validity with Brampton and Mississauga wanting to break up. The problem is that I don't trust Doug Ford to do it in a way that will be fair to both Mississauga, Brampton, and especially Caledon. So maybe there is some validity in breaking them up, but what's going to happen once again, yeah, with healthcare? We are going to see a small town get left behind, most likely lose out on access to being regionally involved with the area that is closest related to them. So maybe they get lumped in with York Region. Well, Doug Ford's also looking at dismantling York Region. So what happens when that happens? Yeah, I feel like we're going to end up seeing a game of hot potato where a lot of the smallest parts of Ontario, especially just outside of the main core GTA, are going to essentially be neglected. Like, look what's happening in Minden. They're closing the Minden ER, and people are begging and screaming for Doug to do something, and Doug's just like, it's out of my hands. But it's not. It is not out of his hands. He can directly make a difference, and he is choosing not to.
What do you see as next steps? Because this is not the end of the fight. This is the start of the fight for healthcare. This is the hill we're going to die on. I'm willing to die on it. I think you are too. What are the next steps? Because this is not about me. This is about my own children and their children, because with they're saddled with student debt, unaffordable housing, car payments, jobs. They're all in unionized jobs, but some of them are gendered unionized jobs, so they're not well paying. They can't get ahead. If you add in any sort of healthcare costs, you're going to break them.
The next steps, honestly, when it comes to everyday citizens, I think this is one of those scenarios, and we have seen lots of success with this. So I'm not making this sound like this is a defeatist attitude. I am not in any way saying that this is not going well. But I truly think that the next step is taking Doug to court, because we have seen time and time again, every time that Doug Ford makes a poor action and he does things that negatively affects the impacts of Ontarian citizens, when we take him to court, we win. Bill 124, we win. We will keep winning, and we will keep showing that Doug Ford's actions are both illegal and in violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, because he does not care about our rights. And I think that that is where we win. We make this stand. And the truth is that everyday Canadians and Ontarians are so tired, and we are exhausted. We are poor, and we are overworked, and we feel like there is nobody there who can stand up to Ford. So what we need to do is we need to ensure that the people who have the ability, the power, the organizations who can are suing him when appropriate, and we are stopping things from happening. And we've seen it with labor, and I think we're going to see it with healthcare.
Any last words you want to give to Rabble listeners?
I think it's very easy to be dismayed and think that, you know, there's no winning and things are only going to get worse and all that. And I don't want to blame anybody for feeling that way. What I would say is that as entrenched in all of this as I am, and as upset as I am about a lot of this stuff, I am still optimistic about the long-term trend. I am still optimistic that by the time that my child is my age, we will be in a better place. It might take 10, 20, 30 years to undo the damage that Ford has done, but we will do it. And if you're not ready to fight the good fight and put the hard work in, that's okay. You don't have to do it all the time. There are times where I don't post videos and I don't comment on things and I'm just exhausted. Those of us who are fully engaged in this cannot fight this fight every day. All I ask is that when it counts for elections, when your voice needs to be heard, that you stand up and you use your voice, because we will keep fighting and we will win. And we need people to not burn themselves out, because this will be a long haul fight.
Wow. There's nothing more to add, except thanks, Frank, for talking to Rabble Radio and for talking to me today.
Thank you very much.
That was Rabble contributor Doreen Nickel and Frank Dominic in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Doreen and Frank. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Here to bring us up to date on the news of the week on Rabble.ca, I'm going to pass it over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in Ontario politics, parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg covered a tense exchange in the Ontario legislature between Ontario NDP leader Merritt Stiles and Doug Ford and his Progressive Conservatives over the bad air quality in Ontario caused by the recent wildfires. The NDP leader pointed to the Ford government's environmental record, which includes weakening its own climate targets. By their actions, Stiles argued, the Ontario Conservatives are making the climate crisis worse. Ford's ministers deflected, seemingly desperate to talk about anything else, like their government's investment in electric vehicles and improvements to the power grid. Ford himself lowered the quality of the debate even further by resorting to personal attacks on Stiles, claiming that she was politicizing wildfires. Stiles said that Ford continued to be in denial about climate change and asked him to reverse his plans to develop parts of Ontario's Greenbelt, which absorbs climate-causing carbon monoxide. In labor news, Rabble labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga covered the new requirement for naloxone kits to be available on some construction sites. Naloxone is a drug that can save the life of someone experiencing an opioid overdose. The Residential Construction Council of Ontario said in a press release that ensuring naloxone kits are available on construction sites can save lives. A large percentage of employees in the construction sector are affected by mental health issues and addiction. Of the approximately 2,500 people in Ontario who died from opioid-related causes in 2020, nearly one-third were employed in the construction industry. In a joint press release, the Carpenters District Council of Ontario and the College of Carpenters and Allied Trades praised the move, saying, quote, "Our industry has come a long way in prioritizing and establishing best practices to preserve the physical health and safety of our workers. Mental health must become part of that focus. Attention to physical and mental wellness can both save lives," end quote. In other labor news, the Ontario Federation of Labor held a rally across the province last weekend. Thousands of demonstrators rallied at over 30 different sites to protest what they felt is an anti-worker attitude from the Doug Ford government, as well as government attempts to privatize public sector services like healthcare. In a statement to Rabble, Ontario Federation of Labor President Patty Coates outlined the grievances that Ford has inflicted on labor in the province, saying, quote, "Since the beginning, the Ford government's second term, they have made moves to privatize our health care system with Bill 60, attack public education with Bill 98, threaten workers' rights to strike with Bill 28, destroy the Greenbelt with Bill 23, and further disrespect public sector workers by appealing the decision to strike down Bill 124, end quote. Also in labor news this week, Rabble columnist Jody Rye explains how HR administrators in workplaces can be crucial in creating a more equitable, inclusive, and diverse work environment. In the column, Rye breaks down some key barriers to inclusion and how an HR administration team can effectively remove them to cultivate an inclusive work culture. Barriers to inclusion may include unconscious biases and stereotypes, a lack of diversity in leadership, inadequate policies and procedures, limited access to resources and opportunities, communication and language barriers, and more. Eliminating these barriers means a workplace must first recognize and address these obstacles and then work towards dismantling discriminatory practices, promoting diversity and equity, creating inclusive policies and procedures, and providing equal access to resources and opportunities for all individuals. When these steps are taken, workplaces can become places where employees feel respected and valued, and as a result, perform their role at their highest potential. This week in Rabble's Book Lounge, Stephen Wenzel interviews Robert Picart, author of Gaudi. Gaudi is based on Picart's mother's experiences overcoming trauma after immigrating to the UK and Canada in the mid-1990s. Picart explained how many Canadians can relate to Gaudi's story, saying a lot of folks in Canada come from somewhere else. They can understand the tenets behind a young Jamaican girl making her way from the West Indies through the UK to Canada, trying to figure it out. End quote. Could this book be added to the shelf of great Canadian literary material for students? With Gaudi's story beginning at the age of 16, students may be able to see themselves in her character and better understand important concepts like migration, equity, inclusion, and more. Read Wenzel's full review on Rabble today. Finally, on Wednesday, June 21st at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, join us for our final Off the Hill panel before our summer hiatus. This month, we focus on National Indigenous Peoples Day. What is causing the slow-moving action on the 94 calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada? What can land back look like across Turtle Island? And are we any closer to true reconciliation? Join our guests this month as we tackle these questions and more. Register today with the link in our show notes, or for all of you listening on radio, visit rabble.ca. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. Finally, a word from a rabble rouser to watch, Neelam Chatta.
My name is Neelam, and I'm thrilled to be named as a rabble rouser to watch in 2023. I've been active in biosphere protection, to use a really broad term. That's included climate action and climate justice, and being an active organizer to protect old growth rainforests, as well as preventing pipelines and making efforts to change policy at all levels of government. You can read a bit about what I've been working on in the rabble.ca interview, but more importantly, I hope that you are motivated to make a difference. Thank you for all that you do, and thank you for nominating.
Thanks, Neelam. As she mentioned, you can read our full interview with Neelam on rabble.ca today. And finally, if you want to be a part of the team that gets to meet awesome people like Neelam, as well as other activists, politicians, artists, environmentalists, and changemakers across the nation, it might interest you to know that Rabble is currently hiring. Rabble.ca is currently hiring for three exciting jobs this month: a national politics reporter, a promotions coordinator, and an assistant editor. In a national politics reporter, we're looking for a motivated and energetic writer with a passion for federal politics and sharing news not always covered in the mainstream media. Are you an individual under 30 in the Ottawa region? We encourage you to apply. For our promotions coordinator role, you will work with our editor and promotions team to help support Rabble in revenue growth through fundraising, advertising, and event planning. If you're an individual under 30 in the Toronto area, we encourage you to apply. And finally, we're looking for an assistant editor. In this role, you'll be managing daily needs as assigned by Rabble editor Nick Seabrook, both editing pieces of content and also writing original pieces. If you're an individual under 30 in the Toronto area, again, we encourage you to apply. For more information about these positions, please visit rabble.ca/about/opportunities. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA. Do you want to share Rabble Radio on your campus, college, or community radio station? It's easy. To find more information on how your local radio station can become a host for Rabble Radio, please email us at editor@rabble.ca. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nierenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
You're listening to CGI.